Okay, so today I'm going to continue the discussion about renormalization in the on the example of the 5-4 theory, and I'm now in a good point to discuss the important concept of renormalization group. What it means, why is there a structure of group of transformation hidden or contained inside the concept of renormalization. So let us remind what we did yesterday. We wanted to compute quantities in a quantum field theory at first order in perturbation theory, so at one loop. So we were interested in computing the 5-4 massless theory, massless quantum field theory. And in order to do that, what we want to compute are Green's function, but Green's functions or correlation functions, which mainly that we want to be able to compute in the theory quantities like, for instance, the four-point function of the theory or the two-point function in the vacuum of the theory involving some operator, which I call the renormalized field operator. So this is an operator, and it's called the renormalized field operator. And we saw that in order to compute those objects, for instance, you have, in fact, to use an action in the functional integral. For instance, if you want to define this in terms of integral over some field phi of exponential of I over h bar s of phi, okay, you have to use an action which is called the renormalized action, which, and you have to adjust the coefficient in this renormalized action in order to get something finite here. And so in fact you have to introduce what is called as an intermediate, as a step, an ultraviolet cutoff on the momenta, on the energy. So I assume that the energy and the momenta are always smaller than this big lambda. And then we saw that, in fact, we need a renormalization of mass because we need to keep the theory massless, and the mass is renormalized, in fact, by radiative corrections, so quantum corrections. But the most important effect that I will discuss today is the renormalization of the coupling constant. We saw that in this renormalized action that you have to use, for instance, in a functional integral, if you use a functional integral to quantize the theory, then this is not the usual action you would naively take if you have. But I had a term that I think I called B over 2 phi squared, which is contains the effect of mass renormalization. And you also had to renormalize the coupling constant. Okay, and I don't remember exactly which were the value of the coefficient, but I will need it in the following. So in fact, we saw that in order to have, for instance, a four-point irreducible function finite, the object you construct out of the four-point Green function by this operation of Legendre transform, so which I think I denoted it 5-4 of p highs. So it corresponds to the sum over all irreducible diagrams with momenta coming p1, p2, p3, and p4 with the constraint that you have a conservation of the energy of the momenta removed, we saw that we got something which was, in fact, so the classical result is just a coupling constant if you don't take into account quantum corrections. And then we saw that we found at the end something which was there was a 1/2. There was the term of order h bar, hgr square, 1/2 and 1/4 pi squared. And we had a contribution of which was finite, which was the sum over all the channels. So I had p1 plus p2 divided by some mu squared. Plus the same thing by replacing 2 is replaced by 3, plus the same thing by when 2 is replaced by 4. So we have 3 contributions. And this was obtained if you take as C GR, the coupling constant, and then but correct this by what is called a coupling constant counter term, which is 1/π², and there was the divergent part which comes in perturbation theory, which is logarithm of lambda squared divided by mu squared. You see, and then you get a finite result if you take this as an expression for the coupling constant you put in your initial calculation, and if you take the limit lambda goes to infinity, then you get something which is perfectly finite and in fact which has all the properties which are required for a quantum theory. Yes?
So this thing you wrote on the top line,
yes?
So the renormalized field operator.
Yes.
So this time order product with the expectation value of the time order product to renormalized field operator.
Yes.
Is that just what you would calculate with a path integral if you use this
action? Yes, that's exactly that. So this is simply this will be given by I compute this and I had the products of phi of x1, so this will be simply let us write it in a very sketchy way, an integral over exponential minus I over h bar sr phi divided by ei over h bar sr. You see? So the random variable we are integrated in the functional integral gives you the expectation value of those operators, the matrix element of those operators. Okay? And so so you see that in this calculation, you have this seemingly a little bit strange fact that you had to introduce for mathematical consistency an energy or a mass scale mu, which is called the renormalization mass scale, and you had a renormalized coupling constant, GR, and apparently starting from a theory where you had one coupling constant, a classical theory, you now have 2 parameters. And what's the meaning of this? What is the meaning of this renormalization scale? And as I said at the end of the lecture, in fact, in order to understand the meaning of this mass scales, which is present in the result of the calculation, you have to think about how do you measure a coupling constant? How do you measure a coupling constant in a theory? And in fact, it's very important to realize that in any physical process, in fact, you measure a coupling constant introducing implicitly or explicitly in your experiment some energy scale. And let us consider that in this case. So remember here that, for instance, in fact, in high energy physics, what you measure in experiments usually are just scattering processes. So let us consider scattering process. That's a very idealized scattering process, but imagine that you can build out particles, create massless particles corresponding to the 5-4 theory and accelerate them in some accelerator. They are neutral, massless, so it's not very clear how you can accelerate them, but let's assume that you have a magic device which accelerates them, and then you make collision between those two particles. Okay? So, for instance, the simplest scattering process you can imagine is that you are in the center of mass of the particle. So you have a particle with momentum. So in fact, those are massless particles in our case. So if everything is simple, you know that the square of the momentum of the particle has to be equal to is equal to the energy of the particle. So I have so let us consider that a particle with an energy E. A particle with an energy E, so I describe a collision process in the center of mass coordinate, and then they interact here, and here comes out a particle with an energy A and a particle with an energy E. Okay, and by conservation of energy and of momentum, the only variables which the energy is conserved, the impulsion is conserved, and therefore the only quantity that you can observe is how the differential cross section, so the differential cross section, d sigma over d omega, how this depends on your on the energy and on the angle. So you have one variable which is the angle, and the other variable, which is the energy, and that's all what you have. Okay. And if you I think you have seen that in the lectures by Kostia Zarembo. But if you do that a bit carefully, you find that if you don't take into account the quantum correction in a quantum theory, this should be given simply by a formula which is, if I am right, 1 over 26 pi squared times the energy of the incoming particle squared. This is a scattering, this is a cross section, so it must have the dimension of a length squared, so 1 over some energy, and then you have the coupling constant. So that's the classical, and then you have to compute the quantum correction to that. Okay? So you see that in a classical theory, in fact, if you measure the differential cross section in such a process, that's a way to measure the coupling constant of the theory, the strength of the coupling between the particles. And this, once you normalize by the energy, then you get some number which is independent on at which energy your particle are accelerated. Okay? Okay, so that's how one measures that. Now, imagine that you want to compute to measure that in the full quantum theory. So in the full quantum theory, in fact, there is a result that I have no time to explain, which is that, in fact, this differential cross-section, in fact, so that's in the classical order, so that's a leading order, if you want. And in the full quantum theory, in fact, a very similar result holds. So you have 26 pi squared, 1 over e squared. But then you have to replace the classical result which corresponds to a vertex like that. So this is described by computing this process by just taking it into account this Feynman diagram, where you have one vertex to the power g here. And if I replace this by doing a full-fledged quantum calculation, taking into account all the diagrams of the theory, all the Feynman diagrams, in fact, you end up with a formula which is simply what is called, is proportional to what is called the modulus of the S-matrix element. So it's the square of the scalar product of the states, where here this is the momentum P1 incoming, this is the momentum P2, this is the momentum P3 outgoing, coming, and this is the momentum P4 coming out. Okay, so that's what is called an S matrix element. And this S matrix element, in fact, you can compute it in a quantum field theory. And there is a very beautiful formula which is called, comes out from what is called the LSZ reduction formula. And I don't know exactly if you have already met that formula. No, okay. So it's L means, yes?
Is there a square?
Oh, of course, there is a square, because it's it has to be a probability of interaction, so it has to be the square of matrix elements, of course. Okay? And the LSZ reduction formula, in fact, relates S matrix element, where the S matrix is this diffusion, the two, the Green functions, and in fact, and the irreducible function, functions of the theory. And so L stands for Lehmann, S for Simoncic, and Z for Zimmermann. And you will find a description and the derivation of this reduction formula, for instance, in Peskin's books. It's found in every books of quantum field theory. In fact, it's simple to give you the idea of how this works, but I won't have time with it. I will just give the results, which is in our case, which is a massless theory. So we have a massless phi 4 and at just one loop, so first order in H bar. This LZ reduction formula takes a very simple form. It tells you that this matrix element P3, P4, P1, P2 is nothing else but this irreducible amplitudes P1, P2, P3. Okay. So it's equal. There is an equality because what you compute in a scattering process and the sum of these diagrams. You see? And in fact, up to a few subtleties associated to the renormalization of the field, etc. This is a formula which, for the phi-4 theory, holds at all orders and even for a massive theory. So it's more complicated for quantum electrodynamics or things like that, but for a phi-4 theory, in order to compute an S-matrix element between for two particles, gives the two particles, in fact, this relation between the sum of an irreducible diagram and the element of the S matrix you are interested in is an identity. It's more complicated for when you have two particles, which gives three or four or five particles. It's more complicated when you have a more complicated theory. But that's you see, there is a simple relation between the irreducible functions and the S matrix element. Okay. And of course, here, this S-matrix element here This irreducible function is defined in here for any p's. So for instance, p1 squared can be non-zero. Okay. Here I am considering a transition amplitude between a physical state where p1 squared equals p2 squared equals 0, simply because p1 squared is p1 squared minus e squared, so it has to be 0. This is a three-dimensional momentum, and that's the energy. You see? The same for the outgoing state. So in fact, this relation holds when the pi's, the four momenta pi's, are what is called on the mass shell. On the mass shell, which means that in order to have the S-matrix element, the element of the S-matrix, you have to compute some Green function, or some irreducible Green function, and then reduce the momenta on the fact that p1 squared equal p2 squared equal p3 squared equal 0. You see? So. And then, by conservation of energy or momentum, of course, this implies that p4 squared is also equal to 0. Okay. Okay, so in fact, what we have the object we have computed here, which was a mathematical object, in fact corresponds, if you set the PIs on the mass shell, it corresponds to computing, in fact, an object whose modulus gives you what is the coupling constant of the series. See? So in fact, okay. So now let us go back to this formula. In a process like that, of course, let us take simply the simple case where the angle is pi over 2. So I'm going two particles like that. Two particles come out at in a perpendicular direction. That's the simplest. In that case, of course, then you see that everything is symmetric. And in fact, in this condition, you have that all the PIs, PIs dot PG, which are in your, are all of order E squared. So some are 2 E squared, some are 4 E squared, but those are numbers of order E squares. So basically, then this tells you that if I am measuring such a process, d sigma over d omega is by some number I don't care about, 1 over E squared, and something which is of order here, that's this, let us state the P to be of order, and I have something which is just this quantity, so which is gamma 4, the irreducible function, when all the p's, all modulus of pi, are of order e. Okay? And you see that this last quantity is something like gr plus this number, well, let us write it to be sure, gr squared, there is some number which is 1 over r, 4 pi squared, and then you have a log, and you have a 3 because you are computing, there are 3 contributions, and then I have something which is basically a logarithm of e squared over squared. Okay. So, in fact, you see that now, remember, for a classical theory, this number here is just what is the coupling constant of the theory. So, this you can the number you get when you make an experiment, which corresponds to this quantity you are able to compute in the quantum theory, is just but, this is nothing but the physical complicant, the physical coupling constant of course there is a modulus square here. So this object here is just the physical coupling constant measured at an energy E. See? And what this calculation tells you is that in the interacting quantum 5-4 theory, so let us define this G physical, which is a function of E. What this calculation tells you that if you make a measurement, you find a different value for this physical coupling constant. If you make the experiment at different energies, yes? Pardon?
You say that the whole momentum BIR will mass share.
Yes. Oh, it means simply I enforce the condition that the PI satisfies this condition. This denomination comes simply from the fact that, remember, if I am interested, if I represent, for instance, the structure of the Fourier transform of the propagator in terms of the energy and on the momentum, let's say we are in two dimensions, you see, if you see that the physical constraints that E squared minus K squared is equal to the rest mass of the particles means that in the energy momentum plane, well, this is a light cone, the physical one particle states stays on this, it's in fact a surface, but in the two-dimensional plane it's a curve, on this curve. So if I had, if I was in three dimension, K1, K2, then I have a surface which is like that. So the energy and the momenta of a physical particle are constrained by the fact that they must satisfy M, and this surface, so here I have a surface, I have a three-dimensional, in fact, surface in the four-dimensional K equal E K space. And this three-dimensional surface is called the mass shell. Okay, so, in fact, the four-point irreducible function is defined for any value of the momenta. But, the scattering amplitudes and the S-matrix element are defined if the momenta are restricted to be on the mass shell. If you choose a four-dimensional momenta which is somewhere here, it doesn't correspond to any physical state of the theory. See? Okay, so that's why it's called mass shell. Okay, so... you see that the depends on E. And therefore, then we have, you see that from this formula, if you choose E to be equal to mu, then GR is equal to G physical of E. Because then the logarithm of 1 disappears. And you get that G physical of E defined by this formula. This is, I define by definition, G physical of E. Okay. So, in fact, choosing a mu in your calculation means simply that I'm choosing the energy at which I define what I will call the coupling constant. I can invert the thing, choosing a mu in my calculation is equivalent to choose E where I defined what I called the coupling constant GR. See. So in fact, there is no new parameter or a new arbitrariness in the theory. The quantum theory doesn't depend on more parameters than the classical theory. Simply, it depends always of only one parameter, a coupling constant, but simply you have to specify at which energy scale you measure your coupling constant and then put it in your calculation. Okay? So, and these are the very important consequences. Because, so keep that in mind, and this has a very important consequence, because this means that different theories. So now imagine that now I'm doing calculation in my quantum theory, and in my calculation in my quantum theory, I can choose a mu, and I can choose a renormalized coupling constant. Okay? So let me do the calculation for my theory for a choice of mu, let us call it mu1, and for a choice of gr in my theory that I will call it g. Well, I will remove the R up to now. I will do G1. So, and then with this choice of G1 and this choice of mu1, I'll get some result for my coupling constant. Now, let us choose another mu2 and another G2. Okay? You realize that you may very well have that the four-point function, the irreducible four-point function of your theory is the same by different choice of mu1 and mu2. You see? So you may very well have that along some curve, the irreducible four-point function, and in fact, all Green functions, functions of the theory are the same. You see? So this sets of points, so in fact they are the same quantum theory. Okay, this corresponds simply to the fact that when I'm doing the calculation, here I am choosing an energy scale mu1, and therefore the physical coupling constant turns out to be g1. If I make a physical constant here, if I choose an energy scale mu2 to define the coupling constant is g2. Okay? But of course, then you have, for different choice, you have different theory like that. So in fact here you have different theories with different G physical at a given energy E, because I can choose by energy scales E where I define what's the coupling constant here, and simply then the coupling constants are different. Okay? You see? Okay, so now this lets the fact that the energy, the physical coupling constant depend on the energy leads us to the very important concept of running coupling constant. You see? Because let us, for instance, we can do that for any, but let us simply consider this scattering process. I consider the scattering process here, and I am interested in computing d sigma over d omega, okay, in my quantum theory. And in fact, let me compute it. I will find that it's, in fact, well, there is a normalization factor, I will call it. So this object depends on the energy. It depends on the energy and of the angle of my particles when I'm doing this scattering process. Incoming particle with an energy E. Outcoming particle with the same energy E. An angle theta. Okay. Then I will get a non-trivial function which will be of the form, well, there will be by dimension 1 over E squared, and there will be some function, let us call it, capital sigma, okay, and it will be a function of what? A priori, it will be a function of the energy. We have seen, for instance, that it's a function of the energy, and it will be a function of the coupling constant GR once we have chosen a fixed mu. So we choose a reference energy scale mu. Well, we can consider that it's just an E naught that we are considering here. We are defining what is the coupling constant GR as a function of this energy of reference G naught. And then for different values of the coupling constant and for different value of the energy in our scattering process, we compute this quantity. You see? And then, in fact, the fact that this is a dimensionless number. This is a dimensionless function, you see. Here you see that it's dimensionless because, so this is the value of this function sigma at first order in GR. But you can compute at higher orders this function. You see it's a dimensionless function because GR is dimensionless, GR squared is dimensionless, and this is a logarithm of a ratio between the energy and the reference energy scale, which is a logarithm. It's also a dimensionless number. And this goes on if you take into account all. So this is a dimensionless function. Yes, function. Okay, and then, yes? Pardon? Yes? Let us absorb. I kept this edge bar because I wanted to remind you that this is a one-loop calculation. But you see, I can reabsorb edge bar in the definition of GR. I can say that GR is edge bar times something GR is something dimensionless divided by h bar, and then I can set h bar equal 1 in all that calculation. That's the usual trick that you can. I am in a set of units where h bar is equal to 1. Up to now. Okay. Okay. So this is a dimensionless function, and but we have seen that the effective coupling constant depend on E. So in fact, it's very easy to show from this that this will be, you can rewrite this as a function of E naught and an effective coupling constant. Well, E naught is mu. So in fact, this is just a function of a single, this is in fact just a single function of some G effective, some effective coupling constant of E and of mu. Okay, because if I change E, you see, I can always reabsorb the change in E in a change of what I call the coupling constant in my calculation. you see. And for instance, in this case, the relation between what is the coupling constant at an energy E, and so I have a rule running coupling constant G effective will depend on the energy E, and the way this the function, the way this effective coupling constant changes with the energy is this given by this curve. When I change the energy, I change the effective coupling constant. Okay? And for instance, if I apply here this equation, you see, you see simply that the ratio between the effective coupling constant at a scale energy E, so this is G effective of E, is given in my calculation by simply by the condition that G effective of G minus G effective square of E divided by 3 pi squared log of times E over mu. This is, for instance, this has to be equal to the original renormalized coupling constant defined at the scale E. Okay. So here is, for instance, the result at one loop will tell you how the effective coupling constant then depends on the energy and on the original coupling constant. You see. So the coupling constant depends on the energy of the at which you are measuring the process. I'm just re-expressing this formula. So you see that it's enough to know what are the scattering amplitude in some process at either a given energy or a given coupling constant to know what it is in our theory at all energies and for all coupling constants. Because in fact, it depends only on one parameter, not on both the coupling constant and the energy. You see? Pardon? What? Yes?
Sorry, it's not clear to me what's the definition of the G effective.
Take it as this definition. Take it to be this definition. From this formula.
Yes.
You see that this depends only on I can redefine. Let us compare for two different values of E, and you can reabsorb this. You see, I have defined GR like this. So it's contained in this. Yeah. G effective is basically the same thing as what I call G physical of E in my first discussion. So it just it means that it's not on, it's you can you see. Now in a given calculation, in fact, when I'm doing a calculation, I'm computing things in terms of a renormalized coupling constant, and when I want to compare, for instance, when I want to compare scattering amplitudes for different values of the angle, you see, the scattering amplitude will depend on the angle in general. So I have used, for instance, I have chosen to define what is the coupling constant, what's happening for a scattering with an angle of pi over 2. But then I recast that in the definition of, in the calculation for any angle, and then I will obtain something which will depend, in fact, of course, on the angle. It will depend on the energy, on the coupling constant which has been defined for the angle pi over 2, on the angle, and on the renormalization scale I've been choosing. So GR is defined with reference to this energy scale, and then when I vary both the energy and the angle, I get a function which depends on E, on theta, on the coupling constant, and on the reference energy, where I define the effective coupling constant. Yes?
So that equation you write down there is the same as that equation you put on the top.
Yeah, in fact, it's the same. Yeah, it's the same equation than the equation which is defined here. So I can simply, I'm now considering any kind of physical quantity I'm computing in my theory.
But
so
you rearrange that equation for GR and throw away terms that are of order GR
yes.
cube, say.
Yes, something like that. Yes, okay. So you see that the fact that the coupling constant depend on the energy is true for any process. Any process you compute at a given energy and for a given value of what you have called at the beginning your coupling constant depends, in fact, on you can recast the dependence in the energy in the dependence in the effective coupling constant. You see? Okay. And now, in a calculation like that, what is interesting is to see how does the either the physical coupling constant or the effective coupling constant, which are defined by basically the same equation, depend on the energy. Okay? And in fact, it's much more convenient to rewrite this equation, which is an equation that I have wrote at one loop, as a differential equation. You may ask, rather than knowing this function, you may just ask, I start from a given coupling constant at a given energy, and I ask what is the small variation of the coupling of the effective coupling constant, depending on the energy. So what I start with this formula, and I'm asking now, how does this effective coupling constant, or physical coupling constant, which is a function of the energy, how does it depend with the energy? So it depends, in fact, on the logarithm of the energy, so it's better to write it how it depends on the variation of the energy. And if I do this calculation, I find at the end something very simple. I find that it depends on the energy like that. Okay, so you see. So that's just rewriting such a relation in a differential form. And this function, which tells you what is the derivative of the effective or of the running coupling constant as a function of the energy of the process, is called, in fact, the beta function of G effective of E. And it's called the beta function. Okay? Yes?
The
left hand
side is the definition of the.
Yeah, left hand side, I'm sorry. The left hand side of the definition is a general definition of what is called the beta function of the theory. And this is the result of a calculation at one loop in the quantum field theory.
So I can see that from that equation written there.
Yes.
Because GR actually only depends on the scale mu. GR just.
Yeah, you can reabsorb. Yes.
GR is a number you measure at the scale mu.
Yes.
Yes. So okay. Then only the left hand side actually depends on E.
But you can recast. You can. Just take the. Assume that GR is fixed. You see?
Yeah.
And then you write, you have a variation of G effective, it depends on E, and then there is a variation of G. So rewrite, just assume that this is fixed, and make vary E, and make vary G. And you obtain immediately this equation.
Yeah.
So this is just a differential equation. This is just a differential equation which tells you how, for a given physical quantity, given a physical theory, how the effective Copley constant or the running Copley constant depends on the energy. You see? So this equation is just, in fact, a flow equation, which tells you how the effective of E depends on the energy E. Okay? So it's a flow fact. The beta function is just the vector field in the field of coupling constant, which tells you how this flow is generated as a function of the energy. You see? Okay? So this equation defines a group of, in fact, and you realize very easily that this equation, which is of the form dE d over dE of g of E, beta of g of E, okay, it's an equation which generates what is called the flow in the space, in fact, here it's a line, but in general it's a space of couplings of the theory. Okay, so you have here your space of coupling, possible value of the coupling, and okay, you see that starting from a given, so if you start at E equal the reference energy scales, which is mu from a given coupling constant that I will call G naught. A given coupling constant G naught. So I start here from what I call the coupling constant at a given energy Z naught. Starts at G and integrate this equation. Okay? And you see here that for the 5-4 theory, E depends, so this flow is 3 over 16, so it's a positive number times the square of the coupling constant. So you see that along this formula, so the function is like that. Let us draw this beta function. Here is the coupling constant. Here is the beta function of G. It's a function which is like that. See? Okay? Yes? A flow is just, a mathematical definition. It's a group of transformations. So starting from a given, at energy E naught from a given G naught, then you solve this equation, and this defines for a given E, G1, then it defines for a given E2, it's defined a G2, etc. So you see that if I go from a transformation to an energy to another energy, I have transformations. See? Okay? See? So it's a... So it's a mathematical definition of a flow operation. Yes? From this equation, I just assume that I'm interested in how J effective depends on the energy for a given physical theory. So I just write that if I make a change of energy into E plus dE, what is the change in the coupling constant J effective E plus dE? G effective of E, which absorb this change in E so that this is constant. You see? And if I do this calculation, you see very easily that you get that dG effective takes the derivative. So dG effective 1 minus 2 times 3 over 16 pi squared yes, dE over E. With the G effective squared has to be equal to minus G effective squared times 3. I'm saying something stupid. D effective. So if I take, I have 1 and then I have a minus 2 G effective, something of order G effective containing the log. And then I have, so that's the derivation with respect to G effective. And then I take the derivative with respect to E. So I get dE. And I take the derivative of the log with respect to TE. So I get G effective squared 3 over 16 pi squared. And the derivative of the log with respect to E is, of course, 1 over E. So, and I want it to be equal to 0. So you see? So now I rewrite G effective. I put this at the left-hand side, this on the right-hand side. That's a one-loop calculation, so G effective is supposed to be small, so I can neglect this. So I get just that dG effective equals dE over E times G effective squared 3 over 16 pi squared. Therefore, I get this equation. See? Okay. Pardon?
Why are we ignoring the G effective term?
Why are we?
Ignoring.
Because that's a one loop calculation. So, in fact, these terms, if I put this back, will give the term of order G effective cube. So it's, but I know if I'm computing things that there are second order terms given by two loop diagrams, and I have to take into account those terms also. It's not enough to take only these terms to compute. So anyway, so I'm doing a one loop calculation. Okay, well, I'm going slowly, but okay. So then you see that in fact you have this equation which tells you how the effective coupling constant depends on the energy. You see? And in fact, you realize very easily that this is the equation which tells you that the effective coupling constant depends on the logarithm of the energy. Okay? And this tells you, you see that you have an application which for a given energy. So if I start from E naught, from the energy defined at a given E naught, okay, then I go to an energy E1 defined by a scaling factor S1 to E naught. So S1 is larger than 1 and it's just a number. Okay? Then I get a G1. Okay? Which depends of course of G0, which is obtained. So I start from a G0, I get a G1 which depends only on G0. And assume that you go to a second energy which is S2 times E1. Okay, then I got to G2 which is equal to a function G2 of G1. Okay? And this function, in fact, depends only on the S. This is a function which depends on S1. So, in fact, you have an application which to G0 gives you G1, which is defined, in fact, as some function equals some function F of S1, characteristic of G1 of F0. Then I go to G2, which is a function characteristic just of the scaling factor S2 of G1. Okay? But, in fact, it's clear that it's F2 of F1 of G0, but it's also F of S2 times S1 of G0. Okay? S1 is just what is called the scaling factor. So in fact, you see that those flows, those group of transformation, are just a representation. This is a representation of the group of scale transformation nations in a, so if I make I multiply by some number the energies, then this group of transformation, multiplication by your numbers, acts as on the space of couplings. So this, the way how transformation of multiplication by some number of the energy acts on the space of coupling, that's what is called the renormalization group. Okay. You have a group of transformation acting on the space of couplings, which is a group because if I make one scale transformation times another scale transformation, I have the scale transformation associated to the first scale operation times the second scale operation. You see, so this is a group in the sense of mathematician. Yes?
Some people call it a semigroup.
The?
Some people call it a semigroup.
It's
or if it is a group, what group is it? Like, is it
it is just a group.
R1?
It's just a group R.
R.
Okay. It's a semi-group when you are dealing in statistical mechanics where there are some subtleties. But here it's just a group because you can make transformation, but you can make scale transformation by a factor less than one, which corresponds to divide things. So you have problem when going back when you are looking a bit further at what's happening. But for our purpose, it will be a group. Okay, so now, I'm going very slowly, but that's important to have this idea. So let me finally... Okay, once I have done that, let me, for instance, solve this equation. So first you see that since this coefficient of the beta function is positive, this means that when you go to higher energy, G effective, the running coupling constant, grows. You see? And if you go to low energies, the effective coupling constant decays. You see? So in fact, this group of transformation, in fact, on the space of coupling, if I start from at energy E naught by a coupling G naught, I'm going to high energy, the flow of transformation for high heat goes from that. And so you see in particular, if you have zero coupling, it's zero. And if I go to high energy, it's that. And in fact, of course, I can solve this equation. And if I solve this equation, I found that G effective of E is given by G naught divided by 1 minus G naught, 3 over 16 pi squared, logarithm of E divided by E naught. Okay. That's the solution of my renormalization group of the renormalization group flow equation. Okay. So now I have about 10 minutes to explains the consequence of this phenomenon. Okay. So first, I'm a bit. What should I keep? Okay. So first, the fact that this equation. The fact that the coupling constant, the effective or the physical coupling constant, depends on the energy means something very important for the 5-4 theory. We have seen that in the 5-4 theory, massless massless 5-4 theory. At the classical level, classically, it was scale invariant. Okay? Now, the fact that the effective coupling constant changes with the energy scale means that the quantum theory, it's not scale invariant. So the fact that if you have a beta function of G, if the beta function is different from zero, it means that the quantum theory, I'm sorry, this is an N, the quantum theory is not scale invariant. Okay? Moreover, you can in fact go a bit further and think about, remember that if you have a symmetry, you have a scale invariance, you have a current associated to the scale transformation. It's rather like that. Scale transformation. This current is conserved in a classical theory. Now, so the current, I have said, is an operator, so it's you have a current at each point of space-time. So it's now, if you try to compute this current in the 5-4 theory and consider its derivative in the quantum theory, what do you find? In fact, you simply find that it's, so I think the result is exact. So if you think about the dimension of this current, the current associated to the scale transformation must have some dimension. So this must have a dimension of 4 in terms of momenta. So in fact, you discover that when you do a one loop calculation, you find that it's given by, well, up to a factor, by something which looks like that. So you see. So in fact, you discover that the fact that the beta function is different from zero implies that the quantum theory is not scale invariant, but in fact, it measures the strength of the, it measures the divergence of the current. You see? So it means that the divergence of the current associated to scale invariance in the classical theory, considered as an operator in the quantum theory, is non-zero. And this is one of the first examples of a very important phenomenon in quantum theory, which is called anomalies. There is an anomaly in a quantum theory where there is a symmetry. And you have some reason to think that this symmetry is a symmetry of the quantum theory, for instance, because it was a symmetry of the classical theory. And this, you discover that because of quantum effects, this symmetry is spoiled. You have no way to build a quantum theory which has this symmetry. So here, this is the symmetry associated to scale transformation. Therefore, it's called the scale anomaly. You see, and the beta function measures the strength, the amplitude of the scale anomaly. Okay? And finally, I have 5 minutes left. Well, 5 minutes left. So I have the choice between discussing two things. Pardon?
We have a short 5 minutes, but a long 5 minutes.
Yeah. Ah. Well, I started at, okay. Well, I try to go very fast so that by time contraction, I can explain a lot of things in a very short amount of time. Okay. So now, let me explain okay, so now let me explain in a few words what is the modern point of view Here I have explained what are the properties of the running coupling constant in a quantum field theory, where I define the theory by remembering that, you remember, that I had an ultraviolet regulator lambda, and I let it go to infinity. Okay? Now, and that's what has been done in the first days of quantum mechanics, of quantum field theory. Now, came Ken Wilson with, for various different reasons, say that, in fact, we have to, instead of thinking of lambda as some fiducial parameter, you have to take it seriously, because afterward, in any quantum field theory, is defined below some energy scale. So here I draw, for instance, what is the energy scales of the theory. If we are doing experiments in accelerators, we are discussing at what's happening at, well, nowadays it's 1 TeV. A few decades ago, it was 1 MeV. When people are doing experiments in atoms, they are doing experiments at the EV, or if they are doing, et cetera. But somewhere here, there is an momentum, an energy scale, at which the theory you are dealing is not valid anymore. Okay? For instance, when you are experiment in the standard model, the experiments which have been done at CERN or at the Tevatron and which are now done in the TeV, we are dealing with the standard model, but we know that there is some scale where the standard model breaks down. For instance, it can be the gut scale. It can be a scale where supersymmetry starts to enter, so you have new fields, new particles, partner. It can be the scale at which the dimension of space-time starts to be larger than 4. Some many speculations are on the fact that, in fact, the space-time becomes 5 or 6 dimensional at some energy scales. And, of course, there is an absolute bound on everything, which is the Planck's mass, where quantum theory, as we know it, must break down. Okay. So, in fact, a quantum theory is defined starting from some scale. At some scales, it is defined by some coupling constant G bare, let us say, which is the coupling constant at this fundamental scale. And when we are studying the theory at a scale, like for instance at 1 TeV, in fact, what we are doing is that we are taking into account all the degrees of freedom. So we are integrating over all quantum fluctuations at energies E between this fundamental cutoff lambda and the energy scales E naught at which we are working. And by doing that, in fact, we are dealing with an effective quantum field theory with an effective coupling constant G of E. Okay? So that's another way to look at exactly the same calculation. You can view either this as the properties of the effective coupling constant of a quantum theory which is defined on all energy scales, or as how the effective coupling constant of a theory varies with the scales at which you are considering it once you have integrated over all the higher energy degrees of freedom. Okay? And you get, doing that, you get in fact exactly the same equation. You get exactly the fact that this effective coupling constant of E varies with the energy at which you are computing, and you find that it is also given by the beta function. Okay. Okay. So I won't have time to do any calculation using this framework, but the result is in fact exactly the same, and you can view the beta function of a quantum field theory either from this point of view. I define the quantum field theory consistent at a given energy, and then I look at its scale invariance, or in this way. Yes?
Fundamental theory, does it have to be a quantum field theory?
For actual calculation, that's a very good question. I think what you are doing is that you are assuming that there is some quantum theory, and you can start to consider it as a quantum at that scale. So you have some action, something. You don't know where it comes from, but you assume that at that scale, you can keep the hypothesis that you have some quantum degrees of freedom, the field you will consider in your theory. Space-time is has a definite structure. It's four-dimensional. And then you start to compute. And everything which is known about the unknown physics here is contained in the original action you start from to do calculation. Okay? So if you are looking, for instance, thinking about the fact that there is some scale where Suzy comes in, supersymmetric theory usually are perfectly well-defined quantum field theory. Simply, they have more fields, they have more symmetries. So you have an effective, here you have some quantum field theory. You assume that you have integrated over all the degrees of freedom of the supersymmetric part of your theory. And then you start by asking what are the properties of the quantum field theory once I am below the scale where supersymmetry enters. So then, in that case, the starting quantum field theory is already a quantum field theory. If this is the scales where quantum gravity effects comes into effect, we are unsure at all that the quantum theory beyond the Planck scale is a quantum field theory. We hope that it is, and most attempts in various directions keep some principle of quantum theory, but we are unsure. But that's not very important.
Got a non-relativistic quantum field theory.
Yes.
Out of a many body system.
Yes.
Could that be an analogy to what you're saying?
Yes, you can say that. Yeah, I see what he means. Yes, it's quite possible, and it's known in condensed matter that there are quantum theory which are non-relativistic, and in the low energy limit, the low energy degrees of freedom describes a relativistic quantum field theory. Since I think about 1 year and a half, people have been very much interested in the same idea in the context of quantum gravity. So there are some attempts to, some people say that after all, at the Planck scales, there is nothing like the equivalence principle and there is nothing like Lorentz invariance. It's only a low energy effect of a more complete, more fundamental world. Yes?
I should just say that we're going to see a lot more of this Wilsonian point of view in the conformal field theory course.
Yes. I wanted to explain a few more things about it, but I had no time. Okay. But if you want to ask me questions, don't. Please come. Yes? One question? Yes.